You got it in my head. You got it in my head.
I sent you that video earlier, didn't I?
You did, and it's still stuck in my head. Welcome, everybody, to not another numbered Rocket Punch cast. It's January. It's cold as hell. You got done eating your Thanksgiving turkeys and your hams and your potato casseroles and all your mac and cheese and all that other stuff. You got your presents from Santa under the gift. You celebrated the new year. You got drunk probably and blew some. What's that thing you pop in that?
It's a party kazoo. Favorite.
You blew your kazoos and you celebrated the new year.
I mean, I heard gunshots out where I was at.
Depending probably where we're at, you probably hear the gunshots too. Like you've been through all of that. It's a cold January, and you know now it is time for Rocket Punch's Game of the Year 2017 deliberations. So once again, welcome everyone. Welcome listeners. I'm Cameron, of course, one of your hosts. Alongside me, my partner in crime, Mr. Will. What's going on?
Not a whole lot. I am currently recovering from some dreaded, cancer that is the everyday common cold.
I was going to say, yeah.
If I sound different or my voice cracks, I apologize.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get that like a couple of days before Christmas, or probably around Christmas instead of around New Year's.
Yeah, I got mine literally like New Year's Eve and rolled in like the first week of the new year with this, so...
And it's great because you knew what was coming. Like, oh, I'm going to get sick in like one of the important months of Rocket Punch's year every year.
No. See, it's okay because I literally beat my body into submission. Just shoved vitamins down my throat as well as medication.
So you beat your body into submission.
Yeah, I literally punched myself in the throat.
In order to make it numb so that you don't feel anything when you have to go through these categories each month. That was smart. I should have done that because some of this is going to hurt. I already know it is.
Oh, no. Prepare to feel the daggers in your back.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. For people listening as well, this exciting time, all through January, we will be releasing our Game of the Year 2017 episodes, talking through each of our categories and kind of picking our best picks in our categories and eventually leading up to our best Game of the Year, or at least our pick for Game of the Year here. But if you don't know, I'm going to give you the details actually right now. There's no table talk. These are special episodes all through January. But we're going to jump into housekeeping. Now, of course, we're always going to give you the tagline. If you didn't know, this is the Rocket Punch Cast, where groups of friends from this side of the Mississippi and beyond come around this table to talk about video games into microphones. As I said before, we're doing our Game of the Year stuff. Let me break that down for everyone. Let me get everyone in on the know to how we do this. And don't worry, each episode that's released, we will definitely give you guys a quick rundown of how this is going to work. For Rocket Punch's Game of the Year deliberations, is our third year doing these?
Technically, this is Game of the Year number 3.
Yeah, because we were fools, and as soon as we started Rocket Punch, we jumped in the Game of the Year, like from the gate.
Because we hate ourselves.
Apparently so. But guys, what we do is, I think our inspiration came from the guys at Giant Bomb. You know how Giant Bomb kind of sits down, and they have deliberations, and they talk about basically their picks for Game of the Year and what they like and what they didn't like. We do that, but we actually break it into different categories as well.
Not just that. We wait till the year actually ends.
Yes, we do. Like reasonable human beings.
It's like, wait. So you're telling me this may come out in the last day of 2017. You're a fool of a took, yeah, but no. You're not going to get considered.
Which
we at least wait for it to come out.
That hasn't happened yet. Who's to say it could happen? Knock on wood.
I mean, if Dragon Ball Fighters came out on the 31st.
Of course it would. Of course, because it's us. But with our Game of the Year episodes, guys, what we do is we actually sit down, all the Rocket Punch crew, we sit, so it's myself and Will, we'll pick our nominees for each of our respective categories, and then we basically fight, deliberate amongst ourselves to, from six, we pull three. And then from those final three, we lift one above all the rest.
Yeah.
And as our pick for that specific category. Since it is Will and myself, there are a couple of tweaks and stuff we're going to be doing differently this year than we have in years past. The big one being that we were limiting our nominees to six per category.
Thank Jesus.
Before we had like anywhere from 5 to 10, I think.
They were usually at 10, a solid 10.
Yeah, we had to kind of like cap it at 10. Like, no, it's only us two. We're going to go down to 6 here. But for our Game of the Year episodes throughout the month of January, we have 10 categories total. Each category will be released every week this month. So this will be the first episode. Should be every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in January. You'll be getting an episode in your podcast feed. So definitely make sure you want to stay subscribed, and you'll get them as soon as they go live and we roll them out. As I said before, we'll sit and deliberate over our chosen nominees and decide basically who takes home the grand prize. It goes from 6, 3 go away. We have 3 finalists, and now we pit them against each other for our amusement, like dance puppets.
Or if you're really tied to your character, you bust out the nuclear warhead and point it at your teammate here.
Actually, even talking about that, it's interesting because one of the reasons we do deliberate on this is that we... I'll get to that at the end. Let me get to the rigmarole first. Like I said, we have 6 nominees. We'll end up with 3 finalists, and then we'll have 1 winner. And one thing we do is we have 1 winner, and then the other two are just the finalists. We don't have a second and third place pick. We just have 1 and then the other 2 that kind of put under them. Each week, another kind of difference we're doing really cool this year, each week one of the categories from that week will be streamed live over on twitch.tv/rocketpunchlive. It'll be every Sunday at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, instead of lieu of our regular Rocket Punch Cast episodes. So apparently if you're listening to this, you probably understand this is not the one we're streaming. I believe the one we're streaming this week is Biggest Fail. Yeah.
Because we want to start things off on a negative note.
Yeah, of course. Hey, man, it's Rocket Punch Cast. That's how we do things here.
Prepare your hate cannons.
But if you guys, everything you want to know about Rocket Punch and our Game of the Year stuff, you can swing over to rocketpunchgo.com/GOTY. From there, you can actually see all of the categories. The page is live now. You see all the categories that we're going to be going through. You see all the nominees for each of those categories. You'll also be able to see when those episodes will go live. And as those episodes go live each day, we'll actually put a link to that episode. We'll also be showing off, as we go through each episode, we'll be showing off who wins, who doesn't win. You'll be able to go to that page to find all that information. So again, rocketpunchgo.com/GOTY. Now, the point you brought up, I was going to wait till the end of our rigmarole, is it kind of one of the reasons I like us doing this is usually December and kind of in January, it gives us time to play the games. I mean, it's if you're listening to this now, it's probably been a while since you've last heard our voices. It was like 2-3 weeks ago, about 3 weeks ago since last time we
did. Unless you're a patron, yeah.
Yeah, unless you're a patron.
Then you got something right before New Year's Eve and New Year's Eve.
Patreon.com/RocketPunch. But this gives us a chance because I know that we play a lot of similar games, but we also play a lot of different games.
Yeah, we have similar yet different tastes, I could say.
And this gives us a chance when we deliberate and talk about these. As you guys will see as you listen to each of the episodes, you'll learn that there'll be some facts that are revealed that maybe one of us knew that the other one didn't. Facts that, vice versa. There may be facts that, unfortunately, we may have to spoil for ourselves for the greater good.
Which I guarantee that will be happening. And there will be spoilers for everyone.
Oh, yeah. And actually, it's a big point as well. We are going to do our best when we're talking about, depending on the different category we're talking about, we will do our best to avoid spoilers if we can. But if we do have to walk into that uncanny valley of talking about spoilers in order to help kind of build a case for each of these characters or build one against those characters or whatever it may be, we will give you a spoiler warning heads up as you're listening. So don't worry. We're not just going to throw a curveball at you. Will and I will definitely make sure we can kind of keep that in the back of our minds as we're talking about
this. Or will we?
I will. Let me help you. Let me tell everybody.
I'm just joking.
But I think that's it. No updates as well. I figured we'd still keep it in here in our housekeeping. As Will mentioned as well, patreon.com/rocketpunch. If you do love our content and you like what we're doing, recording and streaming, you can swing over there, help support the show. As little as $1 a month can kind of help keep the lights on for here and help us do cool, awesome stuff. We've got a lot of plans and cool stuff we're planning for 2018, especially with our content. and people helping over at Patreon are definitely helping us out. We always want to give one of our weekly shout outs for people who are at that tier. Chris Scott over at Credible Threat Gaming. We've talked about him in mass. Go check out his content, youtube.com/CredibleThreatGaming. You'll catch his streams every Tuesday and Thursday at 8:30 p.m. Central Time. Great guy. Awesome dude. Love the stuff he's making over there.
And they're all right. I can't really complain.
Can't complain?
Nah.
Oh, man. We must not be doing it right then.
They're good people.
So, without further ado, let us jump into the first category for Game of the Year 2017 talks. Best character.
Okay.
So, give everybody a quick rundown of how we're viewing the best character. Our interpretation, best character, rewarding a character within a video game for outstanding depth and character development throughout their series, respective game or series. Really, what we're looking at, and correct me if I'm wrong, Will, is basically characters that were very memorable to us in 2017, really maybe struck chords with us, maybe were something different, something we didn't expect. You know, none of this like one-dimensional broham shooter, you know, I kill people because...
So Doom Guy doesn't qualify that.
Doom Guy does not qualify for best character.
Let me go ahead and guess. That means technically Mario and Bowser don't qualify.
Well, they're not on the list, so... And it, sure, okay.
Well, no, I'm saying in the sense that, like, they're very traditional, basic characters. They, you know, guess what? You're Mario. You have a mission.
You save the princess.
Or she's in another castle. See, and
this actually makes me laugh. Did we pick Doom Guy as best character last year? Or, like, wasn't he a nominee?
I think he was a nominee as a joke.
Yeah, I don't think he ended up winning anything.
No.
Well,
Doom was nominated for soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, no. the Doom Slayer. Yeah, whatever. I remember that soundtrack. That was, man, that was so good.
I still listen to that every once in a while.
Yeah. If you just want to rock some metal, go listen to the Doom soundtrack from 2016. It's awesome.
Yep.
But let's jump in, and first we're going to talk about the we're going to go through our nominees, then we're going to just go through each one, kind of focus on them, get our talking points out of the way, make our cases for or against the people. And then we'll see how this shapes out. So, the nominees for Rocket Punch's Game of the Year 2017 picks for Best Character are Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn, 2B from Nier Automata, Bayek from Assassin's Creed Origins, Futaba Sakura from Persona 5, Senua from Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, and BJ Blazkowicz from Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus. Pretty. I like that list. That's pretty good. I think when we were building the images for these on the webpage, we were both looking at this like, oh shit, we're in for it this time.
Yeah. Literally getting all this stuff together and just sitting there looking at it, it's like, oh crap.
Well, that's even, I know I'm going to definitely recite this probably every time we talk about this, but I really think 2017 was a really rare year.
It happens
in the fact that, like,
once every 10 years.
Like, every decade, this phenomenon occurs.
97, 2007, 2017.
Well, just talking about us for, I think this is probably going to be one of the best Game of the Year discussions we have, because there were so many great games that came out in 2017, especially compared to the last two, at least from when we've been doing this.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. It's a, geez, I can't believe that year's over.
Yeah, I mean, just from a gameplay standpoint and the games and stuff that we got in 2017, it's mind-blowing to look at how awesome that year was and some of the content we got. And I'm excited and nervous and feel sad that we have to go through these nominees and watch them spill blood for our amusement. In order to become the champion.
That's part of the punishment game. We have to do all the work, so they have to make us laugh.
Like that, okay, laugh. Okay, sure.
Laugh,
sure.
Cry, hate ourselves. There I don't know.
So, let's go through each of these nominees individually here. First up is Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah.
I'm going to drink some water.
All right.
Points, thoughts. What do you got? What's your bead on Aloy for best character?
So, she is a great character. Watching her deal with the, well, not really spoilers. It happens in the beginning of the game with the loss of Rost after you play through her being raised by him. And how she responds to that.
Yeah, that could be spoilish, but I mean, it is like in the first, like two, I said,
it's in the, it's in the beginning of the game, but that's why I'm like, eh, kinda. So you essentially see her deal with that and then find that they don't actually know her mother.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's from the, out of the gate. That's right. One of the big things.
I know. That. And then, well, I won't say much more than that because I had to read it because I haven't finished the game yet.
Well. It's okay.
I had to spoil it for myself because I wasn't going to go into this and have my mind blown.
Yeah. I got my water, so I'll throw some ale away because I have beaten the game.
All right, go for
give
it.
Me a little depth here, and then I'll, you know, any other thoughts you have, I'll definitely let you talk. Aloy's really cool. Number one, at least props for me, and I put here one of the points in our show notes here. A female protagonist, probably one of the leading female protagonists from 2017. Now you think about, like, we've had Lara Croft, Tomb Raider. I think that she was
from the reboot and forward. Yeah.
A big one, or even to some extent from the past games, but not as strong as from the reboot from 2013.
Yeah, I think the reboot really defined that character.
Yeah, that game was really awesome. But with Aloy coming in, a lot of things I liked about this character. Number one, I dare say she's now the face of PlayStation.
Oh, hands down.
Yeah, especially like kind of receiving the torch from Nathan Drake and the Uncharted series, kind of with that wrapping up.
Well, going into the face of PlayStation real quick, because when they launched it, the PS4, like the kind of face of PlayStation ended up being, what was that game with the powers and whatnot?
Infamous.
Yeah, it was like the Infamous sequel that wasn't supposed to happen.
Because, Infamous Second Son. Yeah.
And that was like the kind of like the Sony face going into it until the real guns came out.
Oh, yeah. But just like her taking that crown so well, for just seeing her face. Usually when you see PlayStation now, Horizon Zero Dawn is like front and center because of how great that game was. I think everybody knows that. Most people usually understand that. And her coming in is kind of some of the things that impressed me, at least as best character. And I think for Horizon Zero Dawn, during these talks, I'm probably going to bring it up a fair amount. This is from the Killzone guys. This is from Guerrilla Games, who went with a game that really didn't have that much story to it, or at least nothing like...
I like the Killzone games going back, so... Oh,
I liked them too, but just from a story standpoint, at least a character building standpoint, you were mm-hmm. just... You had general kind of like motivations for why you're this dude who's going to kill the Hellghast.
Well, because they're essentially space Nazis. Yes, and they're
space
Nazis.
No, they're not basically. They are space Nazis. That's 100% space Nazis.
Yeah.
And kind of bringing a new IP.
Oh, yeah.
This is a brand new IP, and how well they did, especially coming from a first person shooter, single player route to, or not single player, but just like first person view route to this third person action RPG. Not getting into in the weeds on. Gameplay, but just like with her as a character, talking about the story, you brought up, like, right out of the gate, you know that this is Aloy has no mother. You do not know who Aloy's mother is.
We don't know who her parents are at all.
Yeah. You don't. And it, playing through, and especially in the first couple of hours of the game, you really learn why that's such a big deal. And as I put in here, Aloy versus the Nora tribe.
Yep.
Because of the fact that she has... The Nora tribe is very maternally based.
Yes.
I've been doing a lot of research. I'll pull this out. I have the Art of the Horizon Zero Dawn book and some of the interesting insights for the Nora tribe. There's one thing, like on birthdays... Mm-hmm. You don't celebrate your own birthday in the Nora tribe. On your birthday, you go celebrate your mother. And you actually spend the entire day with your mother, and you give her gifts.
Womp womp.
You don't get gifts on your birthday. You give her gifts and stuff, and you spend the entire day with her to celebrate her giving birth to you.
So kind of like, just go with me on this.
Okay.
All right. Kind of like hobbits. All right. In Lord of the Rings, the hobbits, they give presents to everybody else on their birthday. They don't get presents.
Okay. It's very similar. I was like, what are you talking about here? Where are we going? This is a strange curve. I don't know this road. It's dark. It's scary. But I was like, okay, no, everything's fine.
No. That's what I'm saying. It's kind of like the hobbits. Like, as an example, in Fellowship of the Ring, when Bilbo throws the party is for everyone else, not for him.
Yeah.
And okay. He's giving gifts to everyone as they come in.
Okay. I didn't know that. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
But yes, that's a good point. In talking about that point alone, I can pull out some more references, but one of those points alone really shows how strongly the Noor believe in maternity and motherhood and women as being like kind of the matriarchs of the society. I mean, they're matriarch, they're kind of council of the Noor tribe are women only. Like, if you're a man in this tribe, you can only go so far as... You can only go so far. You're not.
You can essentially be married to a matriarch, but you'll never be a leader.
Yeah, you'll be your hunter, and you'll be helping out and kind of enforcer and security and stuff like that. But you will not be a leader because of how this culture and that tribe views motherhood and the fact that they really came out with Aloy. That, you know, when she was out, she didn't have a mother. She was given to this man to be raised. People were like, she's an exile. She's an outcast. Do not talk to her. As you see in some of the earlier scenes in the game when she's a kid, mm-hmm. She's trying to play with these other kids. And the parents are like, no, get away from her. Don't talk to her. And I think the game really showed a really great interaction. They even gave you some interactive points in showing Aloy's character with that, kind of helping to build the character that she was in the game and really showing... As she's an outcast and looking over, kind of building her character, like she, as she gets older, she understands, like, oh, why are they the way they are with this women outcast? This is kind of BS. You know, I'm me, some of these rules, as far as like the Noor tribe, like, we don't go across our boundary here. We stay in our little corner of the world. And because of being an outcast, she wants to explore and wants to learn more about this world, especially after she finds the focus.
Yes.
In the, that kind of, I think, cauldron? Eh, not a cauldron.
No, that wasn't a cauldron. That was like a lab.
Yeah, something like that. And really, kind of, that's one of the story beats with her is they kind of intertwine it, not only finding more about her mother and who her mother is, but also finding out what really happened to
Earth
and the human race so long ago when that brought them to the land of robot dinosaurs and bow and arrows and stuff like that.
Hey man, look, all I have to say is that it really shows Guerrilla Games' skill with weapons, that the bow and everything else still handles as smoothly as it does.
Oh yeah, most definitely. But even just as with this and kind of the way they integrated this, it makes Aloy a very fiercely independent female protagonist, and especially for 2017 when it came out early in the year, kind of at that point you didn't see a lot of. And I remember seeing stuff online, so many stories of women and girls that were watching this or playing this game and were like, man, this is really something cool, something special to see this, you're playing as this woman as Aloy and going around and handling your business, taking care of stuff. And there's the Penny Arcade comic that was really cool, kind of very inspiring to me, of Tyke and his little daughter coming in. It's like, oh, she has red hair. I like that she has red hair and his daughter has red hair. And it was really cool. And I think that, I bring that point up because it's such a big deal because, again, this is their first crack. This is a brand new IP in 2017 mm-hmm. where it feels like everything needs to be repetitive and iterative. Brand new IP from the Shooter Bros at Guerrilla Games doing this brand new IP in game and actually injecting a story in there. And I think it's something incredible, definitely something to be celebrated. Her character design in reading the Art of Horizon Zero Dawn, learning more about her character, there was a purpose for her having the red hair. It's so she could be special and feel special against all the other tribes and definitely identifiable. Think about it. You play the game, have you ever seen another redhead in the...
No, but... and
not to say that there couldn't be, but...
No, I'm just sitting here thinking, and I'm like, so... What you're telling me is, and this is if we go by South Park rules, that she has no soul. Or B, option B, she's special because she's of Celtic descent.
Oh, Which would be either, great either way for you. Yeah, no.
I'm just trolling.
It definitely could be. Yeah.
But it does set her aside. Now, how does she hide, though, with all that red hair in green grass? That's stealth mode.
It's a video game. You got to...
No, I need facts.
Suspension of disbelief. Suspension of disbelief. Hit the button.
No, I need facts. I need cold hard logic. Hate everything.
Yes, that how a android woman can wear the scantily clad suits as she prepares for battle and wields these huge ass swords. We'll get to 2B in a second.
That was also stupid. But
we'll get to 2B. But I think that just very strong character interactions and stuff, and especially kind of walking through as you learn more about her character. And especially when she starts interacting with these other tribes, you kind of see her. She is the outcast, but she's very warm and inviting and very tough, very motherly. And you kind of showing that even though she was an outcast to the Nora tribe, I think she still kind of, some of those values was kind of in part. She, especially with some interactions with some people later in the game, she kind of acts a little motherly, like very tough love. Like, why are you doing that? You shouldn't be doing that. It's wrong.
Oh, that, or it could just be a strong sense of justice.
That's true as well. Because she also knows what it's like to be, it really drives home. She knows what it's like to be an outcast and what it likes to be different. Some quests she's run into where other people were shunned out because they did something wrong. And she's like, I'll help you. I'll help you do this. And really diving in. Do I want to go into spoiler territory with Aloy a little bit?
You should.
You think you're okay?
Wilson, no, the reason...
Spoiler warning for Horizon Zero Dawn. Skip ahead about, I'd say, 2 to 3 minutes. 2 to 3 minutes right now.
Just because it builds a case for her character.
It does. Okay, fair enough. Talking about, what's the doctor's name? You gotta watch your foot, buddy.
Yeah, whoops.
What's the doctor's name?
Oh, crud. I can't remember.
It's... Regardless, you find out that the... And we'll talk more about this with story, but you find out that she is the... She doesn't have a mother, per se. She's,
Elizabeth.
Yeah, she's a clone of an Elizabeth Sobeck, who was a renowned scientist from back in the day.
long ago, in the before times.
Yeah, before times. And really talk, especially when you get interviewed into the game, as you learn that more, she kind of becomes one with learning and knowing about the technology that she's having, that she's apparently only able to deal with. Nobody else, they look at her like, ooh, how are you controlling these machines? And you can tame them and you can do all this crazy stuff. And as you build in and she learns more about the past, she finds out that she understands like what happened back in the day and what's going on, even though the people around her don't, and she's trying to, she can become that bridge between the past and the future. Mm. But she's, to some extent, she also understands the fact that that's not like a bombshell you want to drop on people right from the gate. I take an example from the Frozen Wilds when she, spoilers again for Horizon Zero Dawn, the Frozen Wilds, skip ahead 2-3 minutes. She jumps into, there's an AI that you're trying to save.
Mm-hmm.
And after you save the AI, you have an extremely long conversation with the AI about the past and about the different people there. And one of the conversation points in there is the AI is also interacting with the rest of the tribe. And the AI asks you, it's like, well, how should I approach talking to the tribe and letting them know that I'm not a god, I'm just a computer program. And understanding what a computer program is, and you get to choose like the interactive part where you get to choose what she should say or shouldn't say. And
no, maintain your status as God.
And
these people are dumb. They need to be held by the hand.
And it's, I think that for me, it was just something really, really cool to see as a character develop in this game for a brand new IP, female protagonist. It was really something special, really something cool. It wasn't something that, you know, no knock on Tomb Raider, especially the Tomb Raider pre-2013, but like it's not about boobs and short shorts and stuff like that. Like kind of like how they did with 2013 Tomb Raider, where it really focused on her character development and some of the interactions.
Watching the struggle that she goes through and everything along the
way. Exactly. I will definitely say she doesn't struggle as much as Laura did in Tomb Raider back in 2013. But
well, yeah, but that's because she had someone to teach her how to handle a weapon all the way up as she grew up.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like, oh, hey, let's just fall into this situation with basic knowledge. No, she was trained to be a warrior and a killer.
Yep. I talked a lot. What other points you have about Aloy?
The way she interacted with Rost showed that she respected a father figure as much as anyone would a mother figure in that game. She had a special bond with him. And it really showed, especially when he gave himself to keep her alive.
Yeah, and then she's motivated to go out. She's trying to find a way to go out of the tribe to go find what happened to Rost and why those people killed him.
Yeah, so I would say it shows that she's made of sterner stuff than just your average run-of-the-mill, like, hey, I can pick up a bow and shoot things.
And I like that. Especially like that whole training montage where she goes from a kid to an adult at the beginning, and they show like her training with Rost and building up to that. Mm-hmm. The fact that this is the woman you don't want to mess with.
Gonna have a montage.
But I really think that a great character, somewhat something of a fresh of breath air from characters in 2017, probably as of late, not necessarily 2017, but as of late. And I think that for Guerrilla Games' first crack at a brand new IP and to bring this at the table,
bravo. First crack that we know of.
Very true. But that's what matters.
Yeah.
Anything else? We're jumping to the next.
Let's move on to next.
2B from Nier Automata. Now, go ahead and preface this by saying we're both still playing this game.
Yes, we are. Cameron has looked some things up so we can discuss character. Before you jump into yours, let me just...
No, knock yourself out. You've probably played a little bit more than I have.
It's very interesting. Before we go into the character, this game was meant for a Japanese audience. Just going to go ahead and say that up front. There are camera angles that maybe shouldn't be in this game. There are.
Apparently, if you tilt the camera underneath multiple times, there's a trophy. Yeah. But continue on. All right.
So I was actually streaming this game and somebody in chat brought up, oh, you're streaming 2 Booty and 9 Shota. Yes. So yes, the main character is apparently known for her posterior and her buddy is known for being a small childlike boy. Take that how you will.
But they're androids.
Yeah, they're androids. They don't technically age. They're powered by some kind of black box reactor. So that is an interesting thing there. What kills me in all of this is the way the other characters respond. Like, just in the opening sequence of the game, after she, 2B and 9S die. Because they do die in the opening mission. It's not a spoiler. It's literally the first mission of the game.
It's the first mission. If you play the demo, it gets you to that point anyway. Yeah. So
right after that, it's interesting how she's the only one who has any kind of proper memory about it, and the way she attaches to her memories compared to the way 9S attaches to his.
Yeah.
So you see some humanity there.
And yeah, I mean, kind of give a breakdown if you don't know Nier and 2B. 2B basically is an android. Long and short of the story here, and they tell you this in the first couple of minutes, is that Earth was overrun by these aliens.
Yep.
The humans went into space, and over centuries they fought this war with the aliens on Earth. You come to find out that at this point, the humans in space in this organization called Yorha basically have created these androids to battle the aliens on Earth, and they send them down there to fight and battle and kill the aliens so that they can go back and reclaim their planet for the glory of mankind.
He did the arm salute and everything.
In it,
God, I don't know why that's a thing. What happened to just a proper military-esque salute?
That makes it awesome.
No, we have to put our arms across our chest and hold it out like 3 centimeters.
But it... That's kind of the rundown. 2B is basically a battle android going down to...
Most of them are battle androids.
In a skirt to go down and kill stuff.
Yeah. First off, why a skirt? It makes no sense to me.
Because Japan.
Oh, I know that. I'm just saying, I'm looking at this logically. I'm like, all right, first off, there's no real battle protection from this at all. It makes I understand the freedom of movement, but other than that, there is no reason.
But it's what ends up happening is that Tubi's character, at least until I started learning a little bit more, I would definitely say that it was cool, and I could start to see some opening up. Like, she, when you first meet her, she is very by the book. Like, you can tell she's very like, don't talk, don't chat, don't do any of this crap. You're by the book. No, no, no. Let's go do, let's take care of business. Let's do the mission for the glory of mankind, you know, Yorha, all that stuff. And she really has, which I admire that sense of focus from her, but can definitely be seen as one dimensional. I have, but what's interesting is what I discovered. Gonna go ahead and throw this out here. Spoiler warning for Nier Automata. I feel bad that I had spoiled it a little bit for myself because I've heard the story's really good.
That's part of the punishment.
Exactly. Yes. We're masochists. Is her interaction between her and 9S. Come to find out that we haven't reached this point in the story is that there's something. What Yorha is not the same. Is not what we think it is. And the reason that 2B and 9S are paired together is so that 9S doesn't figure it out and find out what's going on with Yorha. And 2B is tasked to stay there, and if 9S ever finds out, then she is ordered to take him out. Okay. Now, here's the other deal. This isn't the first time. Apparently, this has been a constant cycle of them being paired together. And if whenever 9S starts to figure out what Yorha is really all about, she ends up killing him and they wipe his memory and they bring him back. And what happens with, what I've read, what happens with her character development is that she, over time, you know, I talked about that cool, calm demeanor. She begins to open up with 9S and has more, like, interacts with him more. You know, 9S is kind of, you kind of see him in the beginning, kind of jokey, like, oh, this is really cool, da da da. And she starts interacting, like, you know, instead of just being like, shut up, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right, or starts cracking jokes and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that ends up affecting her because she is not, she gets to the point where she doesn't like this cycle that she's going through with Yorha and having to kill 9S constantly because of the attachment she slowly opened up to and connected with him.
Okay.
And that was kind of like, woo, this is a really good character development, as well as when you have to make that. We've seen a lot in stories. You may have to make that decision between duty and friendship. We're kind of like necessarily like duty and justice, maybe like doing what's right. Or as opposed to what you're told. And these are, the big thing about this, these are androids. These are, you know, usually you put the program in, they do what you tell them to.
That worked real well in Dragon Ball.
Yeah, it did. We're still feeling the ramifications of that.
Just saying.
That was the stuff I read through on 2B about her character and kind of what she ends up having to deal with.
I'm kind of interested in knowing why 9S isn't allowed to know.
I didn't go that far. I didn't want to break all the spoilers for myself, so I didn't go that far as well. But I think that that's really interesting as a character development point, to, especially because I think that if it had just been that first front part of just like her being cool, calm, and collected the whole way through, would have been badass. But from a character development standpoint, kind of a little shaky.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Mario. Like, yeah, it's a stereotypical character. Moving on.
But as you find out, like kind of reading more about the fact that she's having to be with 9S in order to prevent this, what is she preventing? Why is she preventing it? That's kind of a big deal and a very interesting point.
Yeah. It's definitely different from the normal.
Most definitely. Are we at the next one?
Yep.
Okay. Next one is Bayek from Assassin's Creed Origins. Now, again, you have played a fair amount more of this game than I have. So, for the first time in like 40 minutes, I'm going to let you take the reins here. You talk. Tell me about Bayek. Tell us why we should care about him as a character.
Okay. So, the first time you typically are dealing with him, you're essentially, you're getting the kids, you're going hunting and teaching kind of basics and whatnot. And while you're out, you notice something's kind of wrong. So you tell the kids to, one of the kids to go home. He goes home. You take your kid on the way home. You take him up to this one rock. And there's a pool down there of water. And it's kind of like a trust jump. Like, you'll survive if you jump.
Yeah.
But it's still high up enough that it'll mess with somebody. Okay. And so it's one of those, is like, if you're really, you know, if you really want to be a part of the Medjay, which is what he is.
It's kind of like the Medjay is like the mayor, the Egyptian mayor of like a town or something like that. That's
No, it's not.
Okay.
They're actually an organization of a bygone era. So at this point, the Greeks have kind of taken over Egypt.
Okay.
And these guys were essentially a dark brotherhood that would kind of help hold order and that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyway, he goes through this. He tells his son to jump if he wants to be a Medjay. That doesn't happen. His son is still a kid and he does show very human fear. And it's like, so he doesn't. And he gets upset with him and sends him home. Well, he turns around and there's another incident and a kid is captured. Now, this kid is captured because they want him. They want Bayek.
Okay.
Because they feel that he has knowledge to be able to open up a door that's underground. And they want what's behind that door.
Spoilers for Assassin's Creed Origins.
It's in the first mission.
Okay. I'm just, you know, just tossing it out there.
I mean, you joined in and were like, what?
Yeah, I was.
So, yeah, no. I mean, you're in, I believe, Siwa. You're in the first area.
Okay.
So, this isn't massive spoilers, but play the game. It's worth it. Anyway, you kill a bunch of these guys. They get the kid. The encounter stops. And you're captured. Well, little do you know, when you get where you're going, your son has been captured. And they threaten to kill your son if you don't open the door with this device that they don't know how to operate. You don't know how to operate that device either. He gets very distraught because he's trying to save his son and himself.
Yeah.
And it's literally in that situation. And the kid is all gung-ho. Like, wait, I can get his knife off of one of the guys guarding them, but they're back to him. He goes, he successfully gets the knife. He gets it to his father. His father's, you know, got it behind the back, trying to get out of the restraints. As everything comes back, you know, they're talking, things are going on. He moves to attack one of the guys that is there to make things happen or kill them both. His son is pulled in the way, and he kills his son.
Oh, man.
So you have to deal with the story arc of a father who, I know, like, didn't know that this was going to happen, but he ends up taking the life of his own child. And then his journey for vengeance.
Yeah.
So it's very kind of stereotypical journey.
I was going to say, like, vengeance is very familiar.
Vengeance is used quite a bit. Retribution, revenge, whatever you want to call it. He wants bodies.
Yeah. But I think that the conditions of that vengeance are very unique and very different.
And they're justified.
Yeah, most definitely, because I know I caught it in the stream you were doing. I'm like, no, spoilers!
And I'm sitting there like, no, don't do this.
Yeah, you did. You're like, oh my God. And it's almost like it's sudden. You think, oh, he's going to succeed. And then you just see the guys grab and pull his son in the way. And it just that whole scene and how it's framed, because they still show the son.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, it's painful to watch a little bit. And I think that that's very justifiable vengeance for anybody.
Yeah. I mean, it does give you attachment to the character. Again, it is Assassin's Creed. So if you're all about the sneaky and the shanky, then, you know, don't worry. There's plenty of that there for you. For me, it's one of those games where it's like, okay, I'm going to finish this one, because any Assassin's Creed I pick up, I end up finishing.
Okay.
So now, granted, the last one I played before this was 4.
Black Flag.
And before that, it was 2.
Okay. I've played everyone except for Syndicate.
And then the first one.
Okay.
So it's very much one of those where I pick and choose. I don't play them all.
Yeah.
But damn, first off, Egypt looks beautiful on the PS4 Pro.
It does. It looks great.
I got a 4K HDR Pro TV, and oh my God, this looks amazing. But in the case of Bayek, you do feel a connection to what he's going through as it progresses, and you just sit there and you can't believe. I'm sitting there on stream just like, oh my God, oh no, this is going to happen. They're going to kill the kid.
Yep. It was rough. It was rough. I watched like live reactions for me as I was watching Will's reaction. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. But yeah, and I think that, like I said before, like for me, Vengeance, kind of worn out, but it's a common motivator, but I think the conditions of that Vengeance are very strong, very paternal instincts, because I remember seeing that whole part where he's trying to show his son and teach his son about, hey, here's what you need to do to survive and hunt and learn, and to then be thrown and thrust into that entire scenario is very just, I want revenge too.
Oh, I guarantee you, if anybody made me do that to any of my family members, I would John Wick someone's ass.
Oh, man, that'd be awesome. I'd have to join in with you.
But that's about what I have for Bayek.
Okay, I don't have much else. I know we're both still working through Origins as well.
Yeah.
Great game. I'm
enjoying. The curse of open world games. They never end.
Oh, man, you know. God, tell me about it. I was like, open world game, just shoved down your throat all 2017.
Everything's open world now, except for the next one.
That's true, but it's still just as long.
Some could say it's longer.
Depends on the game.
Especially if New Game Plus it.
Not going to argue with you there. Futaba Sakura from Persona 5. Now, Persona has a lot of characters. Some we probably could have picked instead of Futaba, but I think when we were choosing nominees, we liked Futaba. We were big fans of Futaba.
I like the progression and the way they portray her story and how you get the story.
Throw some points out for Futaba. Why should we care?
So you're in this other world, and that world can be used to free people from their tortured and twisted hearts, or it can be used to take someone and push them over the edge to where they do things that they would never do.
Yeah.
Well, someone uses this world for ill against Futaba's mother and ends up causing her to essentially commit suicide. This is the best way I could describe it, right?
Well, that's what you think? Fun fact, I've beaten the game, Will has not.
So this is what the way I saw it is like it. They twisted it to where it looked like she was committing suicide. Trust me, I get it. If someone went in the other world, you're dead if you have no abilities to protect yourself from it.
I got reference material for Persona 5 as well.
Yeah. Now, I will say her palace is, funny enough, in Egypt.
Yes, ancient Egypt. It's real. Yeah.
She is a pharaoh for herself.
One of my favorite musics in the overworld musics, the do 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 do. I really enjoyed that whole level. Futaba, I guess I'll get some more points since I've beaten the game.
All right.
Futaba Sakura has, it's interesting as far as from a gameplay perspective, because she is the first palace you run into that breaks the trend of palaces. I think by this time you've gone through two or three other palaces, and then you get to her.
Yeah.
And then, like, the theme as far as what's been shown before and then getting into her palace is a little bit, like, I remember playing and I was like, well, this is way different from the other three. Because it really gets you, you're getting to a point where you're like, man, this kind of feels samey a little bit. And then you're like, no, okay, hold on, this is totally different of getting into her palace.
Wait, so you're telling me a story knew how to shift gears to keep from getting stale?
A little bit. And what's interesting with Futaba is that Futaba is portrayed in this game initially as this shut-in. You know nothing about Futaba until, I guess, some spoilers a little bit deeper into Persona 5, so spoilers ahead coming for Persona 5, just so you know. Your caretaker, Sojiro.
Yep.
That's his daughter, quote-unquote.
I guess the best way to describe it would be like stepdaughter.
I'll help you out. what happens is that you, through a series of events, you learn about Futaba. Because it basically, like, the Phantom Thieves, somebody's texting you and, like, hey, I know who you are. And like, what? Who's this person who knows who we are? And the person asks, please, will you take my heart? I want to change. I want to be a different person. That's the premise for this. It's just like, what? You want us to take your heart? You know who we are and you actively want us to take your heart. You find out that it's Futaba, who's this girl who's been living with Sojiro. Kind of Sojiro's taken in as a surrogate daughter. He and her mom were friends. They were colleagues.
Right.
For this research facility that they were doing. And her mom died. He took her in. Since she died, Futaba's been basically a shut-in all of her life. She's never very much like your shut-in nerd person. Sits in front of the computers, doesn't want to talk to people. She types on the keyboards and very good hacker. You go into her palace, you delve through all this stuff, and what was really cool about her character development, not only because she was the first kind of different palace that you see in the game after the first three, but her character development, when you find out what is this huge enemy that she's having to deal with, is her mom. Because when initially you don't really know.
Right.
And it's like the thing that she's fearing and afraid of is her mom, who's just like in the palace is this huge sphinx-like character. That boss fight is hard. At the point in time, it was one of the most challenging boss fights when you run into it.
It did nothing to me, honestly.
After you do this, you really learn a lot about her mom and basically the fact that her mom committed suicide, quote unquote. She basically was given the same treatment that a lot of the other characters have been that died in the game. Right. They went in and changed her heart
for ill.
And she ended up dying as a result of that. What, again, spoilers for Persona 5. And I'm sure we'll talk about it more. I'll talk about it more in depth in narrative and best narrative in our category there. But what you find out is that, and what Futaba is driven by is like, she wants, after you change her heart, she becomes part of the team. She's driven by the fact she wants to know what happened to her mom.
Yeah.
But what's really cool about her character development is that she's a shut-in. And so she's having to learn, and you as Joker, you're trying to, your interactions with her, you're trying to help her break out of her shell more. And become more comfortable around people and interact in large crowds. And
yeah. Well, like, once after the little trip they go on, she's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm good now. And that whole trip to Akihabara, she just freaks out after she's on the train on her
own. Yeah. Ooh, man. And it, as you build up her character and you build that relationship, she does get, she gets more and more comfortable at the end. But you find out more about what happens to her mom and why, and that's, again, that's one of her big driving motivators, and it helps build her as a character, especially near the tail end of the game. Because when you see her, she's the long red-haired girl with the huge glasses. She's always got the headphones on and the hoodie, and she's like, yeah, you know, she's,
but yet she's small and mousy at the same time.
Exactly. She, especially compared to some of the other characters in the game, you can definitely tell that as far as the shadow, you can look at her and tell, like, she when she sits down, she always, like, squats and has her knees up to her chest, like she's trying to enclose herself close to herself to kind of comfort her.
Yeah.
But as you see, as it gets larger and larger in the game, she opens up a lot more to that point. And what really is, what really pushing her, like, is that drive, like, at first, she was, with her palace, she was afraid of her mom because, more or less, it wasn't necessarily that she committed suicide, but that people, when she was young and her mom died, people made her believe that she was the reason her mom died. And that's what drove, you find out that's what drove her into that corner of just, like, seclusion. And not wanting to talk to people and whatnot, and kind of throughout the game, really finding out really what happened to her mom, the conviction she has to find that out to kind of break her shell open and become the awesome person she is. She's the only player that you don't actually have active control over.
Yeah.
She controls all the stats and stuff, and you get that, like, random buff whenever you need it, like you'll all of a sudden get like, oh, full health, or oh, get a shield or something like that in the game when you need it. It has saved my butt plenty of times. But I'll definitely say she's got one of the coolest personas. The Oracle, she's got the flying UFO.
Oh, yeah, no. She's essentially Batgirl after she gets injured. And she's just like,
yes.
She's just hanging out in the back like, I got you. This is an info war. You're dead.
Yep. And it's she really becomes an integral part of the team, especially with some of the plans and stuff that happens later on in the story. She really does become integral, and you kind of see she's one of the, I think one of the reasons we picked her is she is one of the characters that really you can strongly see her change and development throughout the game. And like one of the coolest characters in a cast of cool characters overall. Really love Futaba. What other points you got for Futaba?
I would say my point is the way they portray her story going through the palace, where a lot of it is slides, so you get to see things from her perspective when she was a kid, yep, after everything happened. And so you got to see from a kid's perspective the loss of a parent.
Yep.
And what that can do to their psyche.
Yeah, that's true. And then, like, and this is a kid. She's the youngest member of the crew.
Yeah, no, she totally is.
And just her having to deal with that. And there's one of the big driving forces with her is her mother and kind of finding out the truth. Every character in the Phantom Thieves group has a motivation to why they're here, why they're doing this. And hers was one of the more relatable ones. And just, I want to know what happened to my mom. Like, I didn't kill my mom. What did she die for? There is a connection, and I don't want to spoil too much. I want to save a lot for best narrative, but there is a connection between her and the Phantom Realm.
Yeah. Oh, I have no doubts.
And as far as the reason that she died, and that's one of the reasons that Futaba was like, I'm joining the Phantom Thieves. I'm going to help you guys out. And so it's really cool. Really like her character progression. Really do.
All right.
Man, next one.
Go for it.
Oh, I get to go with this one. Okay. Next one on the list is Senua from Senua's Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice. I think it's maybe an understatement that I've talked about this game a fair bit.
Yeah.
To you and other people as well. Really interested in this game all the way back when they really announced it back in like 2014 at PlayStation conference, one of the two, E3 or PSX, can't remember. But Senua, probably on this list of six, is probably the most unique character on this board because of what she has to deal with. Now, if you do not know about Hellblade, what Hellblade is about is you are Senua. And one of her huge character traits, which for best character we're definitely going to talk a lot about, is she has mental illness. She has psychosis. She sees visions. She hears voices. And this is all portrayed in the game. It's one of like the huge kind of beacon points for her and for Hellblade is that her story is that she's basically this kind of she's a special like Celtic warrior, and she's been shunned most of her life because of her mental illness. Now, this is back in like Viking era days, so people don't, you know, mental illness, people don't know what that is. They, you know, you're possessed, you're some type of witch, you're crazy, something, whatever.
Yeah.
And not going to get too much into the narrative here and focus more on her character because I want to save that for one of the other later categories, but her story is basically that she comes home, she goes on this long kind of retreat, kind of to find herself on her own, to kind of help deal with the maddening voices and people talking to her. And then she comes back home and she finds out that her village has been completely burned down, and that boyfriend, this man that she has loved, like kind of related to her, kind of when everybody was treating her like crap, he was the one that kind of like, hey, I want to help you, I want to be with you, and kind of fell in love with. He is strung up on a, I can't remember what that specific thing is called, but like strung up on a thing with like flayed and cut open. That's what she gets. And so her journey is, she's been told that she can go to the Viking land and go to this area called Helheim. If she can go there and take her which her boyfriend's name is Dillion. Take Dillion's skull, and she can take his soul is connected to, and she can take the skull to Helheim and free his soul from Hela there. And that's what's taking her journey here. But what's interesting and really what makes her character for me pop so much is the fact of the way she has to deal with this mental illness. And as you see in the cutscenes, she's talking to herself, she's talking to the voices in her head. The game does a great job of portraying that even in combat when you're fighting enemies and you'll hear your voices talk to you to try and help you out or try and distract you. And there are a lot of voices in there as she's facing through. And I've beaten Hellblade, so I know the entire struggle that she goes through to get to where she wants to go and like kind of what happens to her at the end. And this has never been done in a game. Talking about Senua and talking about a character, like talking about mental illness to this degree. You've seen probably bits and pieces of it, maybe suggestions and stuff, but never a
game that lets you experience it.
For a topic that's quote unquote taboo to a lot of people to talk about, not only in the video game space, but just all over, people don't want to talk about mental illness. I mean, it's just fact. It's the fact. I agree. And bringing that to the forefront. And that's really what drives not only gameplay and a lot of other stuff in the game, but also her as a character, is to kind of see and witness this. I mean, I know, Will, you haven't gotten this far in the game, but like there are literally like mental breakdowns and stuff she'll have mid-game.
Oh, yeah.
They're like when she's talking to these people and then you're watching this cutscene and you realize that there's nobody there. It's just her. I think Ninja Theory was masterfully done for that game.
Not just that, the audio work that went into it.
Oh, man.
Because, so you need to play this with surround sound headphones. There's no other way to do it. 100%.
100%.
To be able to sit there and hear the same voice in different tones, pitches, all of that from any different direction. The lady that voiced her, phenomenal job.
Melina Jurgens.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
Yeah. She did a phenomenal job.
Fun fact about her, she was, I watched some of the behind the scenes dev videos on this game, which we'll talk about more in future episodes, but she was the video editor for the team. They pulled her in as a stand-in, like, hey, can you fill in until we can find an actress? And then after a couple of weeks, they actually offered her the position of being the lead for being Senua. And she basically, her big thing was like, I want to be Senua, that would be cool, but I want to keep doing my video editing work. And so they found a middle ground where she could still basically she was doing her video editing work. And then afterwards she was going to play new acting parts for Senua for mocap and whatnot.
Talk about a long day.
Yeah. And just not only that, but like, I guess I can kind of tie into the character, like Melina's portrayal of her was very memorable to me and kind of the motion capture that they did and how the cinematic in battling mental illness, how the camera portrays her when you see those moments in the cutscenes, when she's going through a breakdown or having to deal with her psychosis and things like that is very, very powerful.
Or just the way that, that's the best way to describe it, the way they portray her dealing with the rot.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to talk about the rot more in detail when we get to best narrative, because there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about. Oh man. Ah, it's only the first episode. But it like, you remember that first time you got the rot.
Yeah.
You remember that cutscene.
Yeah.
It's burned into your retina.
Yeah.
Pun intended. Because it, like the way they portrayed that character and portrayed Senua, you felt like you were feeling that, like, oh my god, like what is going on? Like, and a lot of like just her portrayal and what Senua goes through on that island in Helheim is very, very impactful and very much felt. It was felt by me a lot through my gameplay and my time with it there as well. I want to hear your thoughts, because I've beaten the game. You played the game. You picked it up. You've played a couple hours.
Yeah. So one thing I can definitely say is it's very interesting going through the opening, because it's all in-game engine. So it's very just smooth as far as the transition going into it. But as you're going in and you're sitting there, headphones on, and just listening, and all the thoughts that she's having, and then how at one point she'll just talk to her thoughts to silence them.
Yep.
Just things like that. It's like, So her internal dialogue is like cranked to 12. Got it.
Yep. And like the whispers are like, you know, should we be doing this? Let's go back. Let's not do this. Oh no. You're gonna die. You're gonna get killed. Go away.
Yeah, like, I'm going to be honest. My mind doesn't do that. Once I'm set on a path, I'm clear.
And that's what makes this so... And I know you've only... I'm preaching this. You've only played this game for a few hours, but as you get further in, so much so, like, some of the doubts and fears and the internal conflict that Sen was having coming from those voices, and, like, the voices telling her, you're going to die, you're almost, you know, you're hanging on the edge or something like that, or they're even motivated, no, keep fighting through it, you can do this, blah, blah, blah. And it was so great. Like I said, you have to play this game with headphones, 100%.
Oh, no, I agree.
It's not a doubt.
It's just very interesting to see that perspective and the way that it's portrayed.
And it's, again, one of the few things that at least I've seen in 2017 has not been done in a game. Or if it has, it hasn't been done very well, at least not to this degree. From a quote, AA studio like Ninja Theory.
Yeah, well, they brought the pain.
They did. And like it, Senua was a character that was extremely memorable to me from 2017. Going through that story, like starting to play the game, putting it down to play other games, and coming back to that, even more so impactful. It made me feel like, why didn't I play this game sooner? Why didn't I finish it sooner?
Huh? So. Fair. I mean, I'm definitely going to go back to it, but, you know, Overwatch keeps calling me, so I have to balance things.
Overwatch. Talking about best character, and they got a lot of cool characters in there.
No, but I'm saying as far as just gameplay, and like I keep getting pulled into that dark hole abyss of time sinkage.
Our final character that we're going to talk about.
William B.J. Blazkowicz.
That's right. Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus. Now, you played on our Extra Life stream. You played for a little bit.
I did.
I literally am at like the last part of the game. I know I am.
Okay.
This was a character I did not think I would care as much, especially when you think about past Wolfenstein games, like even just old games in times past. There's a lot, they take a lot of the lore of B.J. Blazkowicz and they really drive home a great story for Wolfenstein 2. The long and short of Wolfenstein 2 is that you're B.J. Blazkowicz, you're all about killing Nazis, you're giving the synopsis, you're helping to try and start the second American Revolution. America to try and wake the American people up to say, hey, look, Nazis are bad, let's kill them.
Oh, wow, that takes so much convincing over here.
I will probably say, as far as the characters on this list of the nominees we have, probably some of the funniest interactions are from B.J. Blazkowicz.
Oh, as far as humor and what you've shown me, especially the Hitler scene.
Oh, God. Is that what you want? You Nazi assholes. A lot of the interactions are that. I think when B.J.'s with some of his crew on the submarine, they're like, here's a gun. One of the scientists is like, here's this new gun. It does this and this. All he says, all BJ says, looks at it is like, does it kill Nazis? And the scientist is like, oh, most emphatically. It's like, cool. Let's go. I want to kill Nazis. From a humor standpoint, that was really nice and refreshing, especially with not necessarily all. In order for someone to be a best character, doesn't necessarily have to mean it has to be serious and very like tonal. Like you can have some laughs and it still be pretty awesome, and to hear that, and but it, what really kind of drew, drove me to BJ was that as I played more and more of the game, I learned more and more beyond that top level part of like, you think this is a bro dude, big buff bro dude, I'm coming to kill Nazis. You know, it's a lot more layered than that.
Time to take them Nazis down.
Oh yeah. Nazis. Killing Nazis.
You know, I bet you that they did not see that coming.
No, they didn't. I'm sure they didn't. One of the big points that's kind of talked, not huge, but just like kind of the beats you find is about BJ and his family.
Yeah.
He was born in Texas.
Oh, in so Southerner.
Mesquite, Texas. His dad was his dad's German.
Interesting.
He's an American German. He basically, if you imagine like the kind of slightly bigger guys with the handlebar mustache and the big top hat, kind of bigger dude, that's what his dad was.
Okay.
Big German. He was, you know, a guy like that back in the 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, trying to make a living, get money, get paid, do big things and do what he wants. His mom is a Jew. She was Jewish. She was a Polish Jew. And as you go through the game, you see a lot of flashbacks between, like, there's actually one particular point when you go back to your house. Spoilers for Wolfenstein 2 The New Colossus. This is kind of like a little over halfway in the game. You go back to your house and you have flashbacks. And there you see some of the stuff he had to live with as a child. And maybe what helped motivate him now was that he was a kid. Growing up, one of the first interactions you see is his mom talking to him and like kind of cleaning up, like he got beaten up, mm-hmm. kind of cleaning up his face in his bed, and then his dad comes in. And if you haven't guessed already, his dad is very much like the, why are you babying that boy? He needs to be tough. Because the way Billy's portrayed as a kid is he's not very like, you see him as the Germans call him in the game, Terror Billy, like coming to kill people with the axe. Like that's what they see him as. But as a kid, he was very young, very innocent, very not strong or huge or bulky or anything like that. And you find out that this Billy was, again, let me go ahead and say this right off the gate. This was the 1930s. Is that he's interacting with this black girl. He became friends with this black girl. And the dad comes in, is like, why is that boy playing around with that? Guess the word, insert here.
Jeez.
I'm trying to make a living and I can't have that when all these people are talking about my son playing around with this. Guess the word that he says in the game. It's rated yeah. Infirmature.
And, yeah.
And like you find out some of his home life involves his mom's getting beat. He's getting beat, you know, very much like the drunk dad, the stereotypical drunk dad, but like, come on, boy, you're going to do with that gun. He, again, more spoilers. He is forced, you reenact a scene where he is forced to kill his dog, where his dad takes him downstairs, chains the dog in the corner, and puts a shotgun in his hand and says, and basically like the way he locks him in this restraint, and he tells him, you're not getting out until you pull that trigger. And basically it's part of you like learning how to play the game. You're forced to shoot your dog.
That guy's dad can be sent right to a Russian gulag.
Yep. As you understand more, you even see these, I can't think of it. Flashbacks where he's interacting with the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out like they're just they're kids. And they very innocently, like she starts telling him, hey, I really like you. And then his dad is like shutting that down. Like, no, you're not going to do this. And it's all about him. I think that was a really big, especially when you think about maybe just, you know, it's BJ Blazkowicz, he's killing Nazis. But I really saw the motivation that he had of his home life and how his home life tied in where his dad's German, his mom's Jewish, kind of helped. Because after all this, when he gets old enough, he leaves. He goes to the army. He enlists in the military. And that's pretty much the last time he sees his mom.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
you as this particular point in the house, again, spoilers, you find out your dad is there. And I heard you were here, so you were in Texas, so I figured you'd come by here. You have this very like tense conversation with your father. Find out that while you were at war and after all the stuff that happened in the first Wolfenstein from a few years back, you find out that your dad basically gave your mom away in order to gain favor with the German regime and the Nazi regime. He turns his wife, his Jewish wife, over to the Nazis and the killer. And, cause he's like, where's mom? And basically, Will has this somber look on his face. Let me go ahead and help your face out a little bit. Spoilers for Wolfenstein 2. He kills his dad. Very gruesomely, like hands chopped off, shotgun in the face, make you feel a little better, but not before that.
That's too quick.
His dad calls the Nazi, the Nazis to the house to come capture him. And so after you kill your dad, you're basically forced to run through the house as your house is being airlifted because like the Nazi machines have lifted the house and you're running through the house in the middle of the air, killing Nazis, trying to get down and get away. And
his family sounds like so much fun at Thanksgiving.
And it was, for me, it was really impactful, and it really helped. Like, I thought Wolfenstein 2 was just going to be this fun, like, let's kill Nazis, yeah! And it is. But the story, and I've heard people talk about the narrative for that game, and really focusing in on, they did a very good job for a game like this to give BJ a character, and give motivations besides the fact that Nazis are bad, kill them. But the fact of, like, having that troubled life, and then having that, what he went through, and you grow up and understanding, like, no, this is right. Like, you know, when he has his party, when he's getting all of his people on the sub, like, help fight and start the American Revolution, like, one of them's this 1960s black woman with the big fro. One of them's the Jewish scientist dude. One of them's this crazy drunk New Orleans Southerner from. It's so great. The cast of characters are great, you know, and what's also complimentary to his character as well, and what they did well on the game, is that you have Anya, his girl, his wife, girlfriend. I don't know if they're married or not, but he's fighting. Not only is he fighting for what happened to him, and he's fighting against a Nazi regime, but he's expecting. He's got twins coming, and he one of the quotes he comes in the game, it's like, I'll be damned if I'm gonna raise my children in this, am I let my children come into this world where Nazis rule. And
I can't blame him there. Only good Nazi is a dead Nazi.
I'm not gonna argue with that one. But really going through the game and seeing BJ as a character, and like, you know, he's a family man, he's working to protect his wife and his kids. But not only that, you see, because of his backstory, he's working to be, he wants to be a better father. He wants to provide for his children more than his father ever did. And
that doesn't sound that difficult.
It's not. But like really driving that home, I think the Wolfenstein 2 does a, like, you don't, it's a shooter. You don't expect a story like that, but they really drove home a great story and motivation for BJ as a character, and I loved it. Very much like, I know we've talked about Titanfall 2 and that story back in one of the other previous game of the year, I think last year. Bravo to Machine Games for what they did, in my opinion, to Terror Billy, BJ Blazkowicz, and like making him worthy. I'll be honest, I did not think I would care about BJ Blazkowicz as much as I did. I did not think I would care much about the story of Wolfenstein 2 because of, I just want to go, I've heard the gameplay is really cool and you're killing Nazis, but I actually, in a more powerful thing, just as a narrative overall, I care more about the story to an extent than the gameplay, and even more so about the characters. I can't wait till the next character moment where you're interacting as BJ with the rest of the crew on the boat and with Anya. Or with the flashbacks of how we had to deal with childhood.
Fair enough.
It's really awesome. It's really awesome. Anything else? Any other? I know you haven't played a lot, but any other chime-ins on BJ?
I feel it speaks to the writing behind him, because to deal with someone literally chopping someone's head off in front of you and shoving it in your face, making kissy noises, to portraying something in front of Hitler without actually just shooting him right away.
Yeah.
And going through that, it's insane. To be honest, I don't like the Wolfenstein games as they are right now, though, because I get angry. I'm sorry. I get real angry when I hear about some of that shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's rated M for a reason, and it's...
Oh, I know. It's one of those, no, I can't play this. I will cause myself to have issues.
I'll definitely say it makes you really appreciate the world we live in now. Granted, for what it is, it could have been worse.
Yeah,
the Nazis could have won.
Yeah. Well, good luck invading the U.S., but still.
But then, according to that game, if the Nazis had won, we would have been on Venus. But that's another story for another day.
All right, whatever.
Those are our 6 nominees. How long did it take us to get to this point?
An hour and 21 minutes.
Woo! Yeah, this is game of the year. I feel it. This is what it's supposed to be like.
All right, so.
So now, the punishment game begins. Get out your rulers. Put your hand on the table. Let's...
I'm getting the blade out.
Oh, wow. Okay, to do the thing right there. So now it comes to us, Will, you and myself.
Yeah.
To first, we must figure out who's going to be in the winner's circle. Who are our three finalists that we believe should be in as best character for 2017?
Now, I will go ahead and start this by saying, if they're in the top 6 out of all the characters that were put in games this year, you're already a winner.
Hell, if you are, especially after this year, if you are a nominee on this list, on any of our categories, round of applause, you should be happy. There were so many tough choices.
Yeah. There's so many things we didn't put on here.
That we wanted to, but I know I was telling Will, we gotta do 6, we can't do 10, it's gonna take 2 hours to do an episode, can't do it. Can't.
So, that being said, playing, the scene with Bayek, you saw my reaction.
Oh, I saw my reaction.
It was powerful, but it leads to a story that's very much the same.
Okay.
And for me, I think that's not enough.
I'll agree with you a little bit as well. Like I said before, the motivations for the vengeance was very well done.
Yes.
And very different from anything else. But what it boils down to, and I feel going analytical now that we've done with talking about our nominees, is that it feels like almost every Assassin's Creed character, there's some point of vengeance in there.
Right.
Not that their stories aren't bad. Not that their character developments aren't bad. I mean, everybody loves Ezio Auditore di Firenze.
But, actually, wow.
But I think it says something to the quality of games we got last year that I don't know if Bayek makes a strong enough contention
to get in the final. I'd say he's an easy cut.
Okay. Bayek. He's out. He's done. Pull that Band-Aid off. So we got 5. So we got 2 more.
I'm going to go ahead and say this right now. Personally, I think Futaba and 2B walk into a bar.
Oh, I love this. You're bringing this back. They walk into a bar.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now, my vote is on Futaba.
Of course it is, yeah. Persona fanboy, you're welcome, by the way. I'll let you play that game.
You never saw it coming.
I would agree. 2B and Futaba, both of their stories and as far as their character development feels kind of the samey to me. I think, and it prefaces by saying that it sucks that we can't play all these games. We play them as best as we can. Believe me, we had 3 weeks and we tried playing as many games as we possibly could.
No, we had a whole year. We played as many as we could financially responsibly play.
And I feel like between the two, I have more investment in Futaba than 2B.
I would agree with you.
That's not. I want to definitely say that's not knocking 2B as a character. And I had to spoil myself to come down further in, and I am going to continue to play Nier. But I think that as of this point, this is a snapshot. The time limit's up, if two of them walk into a bar based right now, I like Futaba's story a little bit better than what I found out about 2B right now. And maybe that changes later on when I finish Nier, but unfortunately, that's after Game of the Year conversations are done. Well,
not only that, like, at least Futaba's story, it's like, okay, cool, so this is all centered around a child's snapshot of how her mother died.
Yep.
And her response to that as a human. I'm sorry, to me that's a stronger setup.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. So, 2B, you out of here. Got beat up in the bar, left for dead in the back alley.
She never saw it coming.
You know, so now we're down to four, and I think this is where it's going to get a little bit tough, because
we're down to Aloy, Futaba, Senua, and BJ
Blazkowicz. If it's me, I'm going to need your help, Will, because I know you like Futaba. You got to make a case for me on Futaba compared to the other three, especially from what I know. And that's saying that I've basically beaten those other games. I've beaten all the games, but can you make a case for me for Futaba against any of those other three in the winner's circle for best character?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. Like, if I had to rate the other three, well, I'd tell you what my three are. My top three. It'd be Aloy, Futaba, and Senua.
Be the ladies?
Yeah.
Why not BJ?
So my thoughts on BJ Blazkowicz is, A, he is a shooter bro that has story. Cool. The story is enraging to me. I'm sorry. A story that makes me angry sitting there observing it, and literally to where we were streaming, I was like, I'm not waiting for this. I'm going to switch the game. It's one of those where it's like, no, I can't put a vote behind him just because of the shell that it's in. Yes, it's a story about going and killing Nazis. That's great. The actions in that game, I get angry on it. I'm just going to be real. So it's one of those like, yes, it's an interesting story. Playing through the moment with killing the dog. That instantly made it a no-go for me. I'm sorry. I'm not cool with that.
It's a hard one. I guess we're putting it down because I would definitely Aloy and Senua are on my list.
So we know those two are going into.
Yeah, they get in the winner's circle. They're safe. Like Aloy's like, oh my god, thank you. But
oh yeah, because she had to do nothing to get into that circle.
But it, no questions here. But Futaba and BJ and I'm
going to be real. Like, as interesting as that story is, as far as BJ Blazkowicz and the stuff that he's had to deal with, for me, honestly, I just personally, I connect more with seeing how Futaba reacted to her mother's death.
I can see that. We're talking about best character. I appreciated BJ Blazkowicz and Wolfenstein 2 because of some of that material that is necessarily taboo and you don't see a lot of in games with, you know, his family life and not only that, but like,
I mean, it's powerful. It's just, I don't know, for me, it's not the way I would want to go into playing a game. Yeah. But I don't know, not to say that it's not a powerful message, and especially the way they deliver.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say from a character standpoint, and when you see that stuff, I don't know if I would use the term powerful message.
Well, no. It's a powerful message to him.
Oh, to him, yeah.
Because as a character, it shapes who he ends up becoming.
Yeah, most definitely. But like as a game and like to you there, it's like it's more appalling than anything. And I think that I see from your point of view, like, just there's a lot of shock value with those a fair amount of the stuff that Wolfenstein 2 does. I think it does it extremely, extremely well. I would put BJ in the top if we're going to playing around and wiggling stuff. And we always do this, the Game of the Year stuff, like put your flag on the hill you're going to die on. I'm not going to stake a huge claim on BJ. I mean, I enjoyed Futaba's story and I liked Futaba's character development in Persona 5 personally. Liked where she's headed. I've beaten the game, so I know where she ends up. And what happens at the end. You went through Hawaii, right?
Not yet. Okay. I'm literally just about to leave.
No. It's not Hawaii, it's another one. Did you see the beach where they went to the beach, all of them together?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you're essentially her key item, as she describes it, so she can go out and be out in public.
Yeah. You know what? What's more than anything, if I put a vote in for Futaba, it's because of the lightheartedness. When you interact with her as a character, we have a lot of characters that are kind of very serious tonally to some extent. But Futaba was very nice, kind of. I guess I didn't talk about it much, but like when you have those interactions and from a nerd and a gamer perspective, it's like, yeah, key items. She's making these references. Oh, that's really cool. She's definitely like, she is, you look at her and you're like, she's got to be the nerd of the group. And she's definitely the nerd of the group.
Oh yeah.
100%.
There's no other way to describe it.
When you, one of the interactions with her is when you go into your room and you guys play video games on your TV.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I'm going to beat you. And it's very interactive and fun and doing that with Futaba. I like BJ's story. That's not going to be the hill I die on. So I can concede. We'll put Futaba in the winner's circle with Senua and Aloy. So let me go ahead and let me start typing here while we're talking and getting all stuff in here. The winner's circle is Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn. Then we've got Senua from Senua Sacrifice. And then we have Futaba Sakura from Persona 5. Congratulations, you. It's all ladies all the time. It's, you ladies deserved it. I think that, and let me go ahead and say, even just looking at that circle, like that, maybe I'll have a rant or something about this at some point in time. That speaks to the progression. I remember us having a podcast episode about like women and gaming and stuff like that, with some of that, not necessarily Gamergate stuff, but to like a year and a half, 2 years ago. And where we're at now, we're talking about Game of the Year stuff. And as far as for Rocket Punch and our best characters are a lot of lovely ladies coming through. That's awesome. 100% wonderful. And I love it. 100%. It really speaks to the quality, again, to the quality of games we got in 2017. But unfortunately, now we must have the ultimate conversation.
Oh, I can already tell you.
We gotta pick one. Now, one is the cream of the crop. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I already put my choice on the...
You already put your... He already highlights it.
I don't see you arguing with me on it.
Okay, tell us your pick and tell us why.
All right, so I'm picking Senua, and that's from 2.5-3 hours of playing Hellblade.
You haven't played long yet. No, you're not even close.
No, nowhere near it. It's honestly experiencing what that character goes through and the way you experience it and the way it's portrayed. That, to me, is the reason why.
The mental illness.
Aloy is a two-dimensional character in the sense that she is on the screen. I hear things from the screen area, and you essentially get very clear, concise thought process and progression. Futaba is awesome as far as the gamer girl and seeing how all that stuff goes. What speaks to me, though, is the time from this morning and last night where I'm actually playing this game, and it's one of those, like, hang on, I gotta put this down and actually think about this, because I don't think like that. That is not my thought process at all, ever.
And again, that's what makes it so awesome. Again, I'm not going to disagree with you at all. You're correct.
So what you're saying is I made the correct choice here.
Yes, you made the correct choice.
Yeah, just say it.
Senua, I like Senua. I love Aloy, and you know I do. I'm a big fan of Horizon, fan of Persona.
They're great games, but I haven't sat and actually had to think about a character after playing as that character. I've had to like stop, take a minute, assess where I'm at, and actually process it, because I'm getting so much input at the same time.
And I'll definitely say, as one who's beaten the game, you're in for a ride.
Oh, no, I have no doubts on that.
One of my favorite boss fights in the game is probably one of the most... That whole, that section, that large little chunk, show so much more to that character, and especially when you start learning more about her past and about her interactions with Dillian and with her surrogate parents at the time. No, actually her parents at the time. And you learn more about that, which I didn't want to spoil. We'll talk about that in narrative. I want to give you the chance to beat that narrative. So when we get to best narrative, we can have like a fucking awesome conversation about it. But Senua as a character, again, it has not been done.
No, not at all.
And for Ninja Theory to come out and do it so well was really hit me. Like, that is a memorable game for me from 2017. I put that controller down. I'm like, just like that. Wow. What an experience.
Headset down. I got to think about this.
It was one of the few games that, just not even thinking about it, when it tells you game is best played with headphones, I'm like, okay, sure, I got a set of PlayStation Gold headphones and put them on. I will not play that game without headphones, period.
I don't even disagree with you.
And I think that Senua is the clear winner here.
No, absolutely. Hands down, no contest.
Yay, we got through the first one without too much blood.
Oh, I mean, there was blood, just not ours.
So,
I mean, one of them was dripping in Nazi blood.
That's true. You're correct. So, to wrap up, best character, our finalists, the people in the winner's circle, Aloy and Futaba. Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn, Futaba Sakura from Persona 5, with the winner of Rocket Punch's Game of the Year 2017 Best Character Award going to Senua from Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice. Round of applause. We did pretty good. That was good.
Yeah, Melina did a great job.
Yeah, Melina did an awesome job. So that's it for the first inaugural episode of our Game of the Year talks and deliberations, guys. Again, we hope you enjoyed listening to us debate and talk about our points for these different nominees. We got a lot more coming. As I said before, you want to go to rocketpunchgo.com/GOTY. If you go to rocketpunchgo.com, it's on the main page. It'll be there throughout most of January. You can click straight there. Go look at the nominees for each of our categories that we've got going on. If you can also make your voice heard, you definitely want to click the button to go to, on that page to go to the People's Choice polls. You can actually vote as many times as you want on those polls for what you think should win in our respective categories and the nominees that we've picked. As we get to the Game of the Year episode at the end of the month, we will gather all those tallies up and we'll be reading those out, kind of going through those points and showing the results of the poll as we get closer to it there. But man, great start to an episode. Can't wait for the next one. You guys stay tuned. As always, stay subscribed to our podcast feed. We're going to go jump to our next episode. We can't wait. But without further ado, guys, thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for more Game of the Year talks. We will be back soon.